We call him Yo-Yo. He weighs 427 pounds. He's a completely mobile computer, specially programmed for police work.
Is he indestructible?
We think so.
Send in Holmes.
Top secret. No one, including Holmes, must know his identity.
Alex, no, don't!
You're not a person.
You're not going to tell them?
In my book, you got to make yourself a good cop. That's what I put in my report.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another installment of Pod Stallions. I am Brian, your host, and with me, as always, is Jason.
Hello, everybody.
That's where you talk, yeah. And our subject today is yet another one that we have mined from you, the listener, and we'll have to give credit when I look it up, and that is sci-fi sitcoms, which was... I think the suggestion was sci-fi comedies, but most of them are sitcoms, and, well... I've watched a lot of these things. I don't know about you, but...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then it's funny when we started thinking about it, because we just sort of decided on the topic not too long ago today. I thought, gosh, I don't know if I have much. And then suddenly it was like, well, yeah, of course we do, because there's stuff that you wouldn't necessarily even think of to fit that category, but it does sort of fit into that category. And, you know, most of them are kind of short-lived. You know, there's not a lot.
Yeah,
of,
I mean, we kind of live in a golden age, you know, where things get more than one season. But, I mean,
right.
Most of the sci-fi sitcoms I watched as a kid were not even full seasons, 13 episodes and done.
Right, right, yeah. And it's funny how many of the things that... Well, there's a few that we'll probably talk about that if it were... Had they worked in... I mean, a lot of them are British as well, but I think had they worked today... That's their first season, or had they been an American thing, we would have gotten, you know, six seasons of it or something.
Yeah.
But a lot of them just kind of come and go. But real quick, I just wanted to, you know, this falls into everything we sort of talk about here, and I think the listeners that we have would sort of appreciate this. You know, I know that, I go to Comic-Con every year. I have done for 12 or 13 years. Occasionally, you know, hit something here in L.A. WonderCon is coming up, beginning of March or beginning of April or something. And I'll tend to go to that. But something like a Doctor Who convention.
Which, I don't know here anymore at all.
Oh, you don't?
The last one I went to was for the 50th, and, my God, was it sparsely attended, and... I mean, the dealer's room had two dealers. It really, really wasn't much of a day.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I forgot. So what happened was, this when I go in to do voiceover, I go to a place called Bell Sound in L.A., and one of the engineers there, I don't know, I think she was wearing a Doctor Who t-shirt one day, and I went, oh, check it out. Start talking about Doctor Who. She's a big fan. Her boyfriend hosts a pub night every month. They watch episodes and stuff like that. You know, fun stuff. Anyway, she eventually says, hey, are you going to go to Gallifrey One? I think it's a yearly thing in L.A. up at the Marriott by the airport. I said, no, I didn't. Anyway, she ends up getting me a ticket, basically. And the ticket covers the whole weekend. You know, I paid for it. I mean, it covers the whole weekend. And I thought, you know, yeah, I'm going to go out and enjoy this. And I remembered as I'm driving out, it occurs to me, yeah, I did go to this thing a few years back.
Yeah, you told me about it.
It was really bleak. Like Peter Davison was there, and I think Janet Fielding and Sarah Sutton, I think, but it was incredibly sparse. The dealer, like you said, the dealer room, even the room when something was happening in one of the rooms, like a talk or something, it was really sparse. Well, this thing, holy cats, did this have a lineup. you know, Lala Ward, Louise Jameson, Peter Purvis. How do you say her name? Annika Wills?
I've never had to say that out loud. I have no idea.
I think, well, Annika Wills, Fraser Hines,
yeah.
Paul McGann. I mean, a lot of
I couldn't
people,
believe the,
old
the
and
guest
new.
List. It was a stacked deck.
Yeah, it really was. And again, I kept thinking, I'm going to get there, and I'm going to, you know, have to be waiting in line for hours to see these people. So, and no, they're just kind of scattered throughout the dealer room, sort of. And if you do wait in line, you're only in line for like 5 minutes to get up to this. They all want to talk, and they're really... Anyway, I had such fun the little time I was there, you know, and I got a bunch of autographs, you know, Louise Jameson and Lala Ward and Fraser and Peter Purvis and this woman, June Hudson, who is the costume designer, did Baker's maroon costume his last season, Tom Baker. You know, I just had this great, great time. And there was actually, oddly enough, for this episode, Hattie Heyridge was there from Red Dwarf. She was, and she looked dynamite.
Oh, yeah,
and,
she was the computer.
It was just...
Hilly, right?
Yeah. And it was great. It was really fun. I picked up a couple of cool toys and some, you know, cool, like, animation cells, like some Flash Gordon animation cells and... You know, a few books and some odds and ends, but really orderly and nice, and it was very cool. But there was one moment that really, really sort of turned my blood cold, and I'll tell it really quickly. So I'm waiting to talk to June Hudson, who is the costume designer, and she's up there. She looks amazing. She's dressed to the nines, looks fantastic. And there's a gentleman in a suit next to her. It's probably her handler or something. And I think the thing was $20 for an autograph. For an extra 10, you get a picture, one of the postcards that showed her designs, and you know, you have her sign it. And there's a kid ahead of me, and he's, you know, he didn't seem like he was touched in any way. You know what I mean? He just seemed like a giant nerd. And he had this wooden gold ray gun in his hand. And she says, "Oh, what have you got there?" And he says, "Oh, this is my ray gun. I made this ray gun, and it's made out of wood, and that's good. And it's gold. And it's got signatures on it." And he starts to tell her about this, and I can just feel it coming. And he says, "Yeah, and people have been really nice, and they've been signing it, and, you know, so whatever." Because she just had taken it out of his hand to look at. And, you know, he then drops the ball, you know, people have been signing it. She turns to the manager and whispers, "Oh, he wants me to sign it." And the manager was like, "No, that's not, you know." And God bless her heart, she pulled out a Sharpie and signed the thing. And then gave it back to him. So when I went up to get my autograph, I gave an extra 20.
Yeah.
And I said, "This is for the guy ahead of me that didn't pay for his autograph." And the manager was like, no. I said, no. And I looked at her and I said, "You know, you have given such enjoyment, for, you know, forever. This stuff is so iconic. This is a small thank you for what..." But it really, really... really turned my stomach that you know, I mean, this woman, but I'm so this little lady gets on. So I wanted to say, if you're listening, kid with the gold wooden ray gun, don't be such a yutz, you know, like this, that, you know, getting on an airplane to come all the way here to this thing and to try to make a few bucks off a thing that she designed, you know, 40 years ago that she doesn't get anything off of.
Mind you, back in the day when I used to go to Chiller Theater, you could get them to sign any guest to sign the program for free, and I used to really like that.
Yes.
Because
I remember those days too.
Yeah.
And there used to be, but I'll tell you, that's exactly why the lines were so sparse. That's exactly why I could get up and talk to these people, because nobody wants to pay for an autograph, and somebody figured it out, however long ago it was, that, you know, There's money to be made at these events.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't blame them. I've certainly paid for a bunch of autographs in my time, and I still will, but it certainly makes everybody a little choosier, I think, at shows.
Well, I get it. But it's also, you know, it's like, I remember meeting Colin Baker and Trouton and waiting in line. I don't know what happened to that autograph, but yeah, it was free. You waited in line, but you were in line for hours.
Yeah.
To try to get
the, I think,
thing.
The show,
but,
used to just,
but that was the,
pay to have the guest in, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know what they make when they come to a show like
that. No idea.
I think it's
$6.
I mean, it's got to be okay, but Yeah, I swear to God, I don't know. It can't be that juicy.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, yeah, so, you know, just be cool to these people because, you know, I'm just, you know what I'm saying? You don't want to pay for it? Don't wait in line.
Especially when they're not a Paul McGann, you know, like who's going to make
it. Yeah, exactly.
The they're, yeah, I feel you.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, so anyway, that just burned my britches.
What grinds your gears share, this week? All right. Well,
let's talk comedy. Let's right. lighten the mood.
Well, I want to talk about a couple that predate us, and I haven't seen these. I've seen one of them, but you know, in the '60s there were a few. Some of the memorable ones were a series called "It's About Time," which is about astronauts who travel back to caveman days. I've never seen the show.
Oh yeah,
but I've seen the lunchbox a million times at toy shows. And
I remember reading about that years ago.
One of the earliest ones I can find. It's a black and white show. I did find it on my Roku and watch an episode. It's called My Living Doll. It's about a guy who builds a robot that is Julie Newmar, and you know.
Oh my god!
If I made that show, it'd probably have to be on HBO, but.
Right.
You know, this was
My Living Sex Doll.
Yes.
That would be
called. Well, yes. But
my living doll that I have a sexual relationship.
Yeah,
with.
It didn't. It surprisingly didn't last very long. So.
No, really.
No, it's one season. So let's fast forward to our childhood, and I think the first.
Small sci-fi, Wonder.
No, we'll get there.
And move up to Small
Wonder. Well, similar to Small Wonder, I would say the first sci-fi sitcom I ever saw was Holmes and Yo-Yo.
Yes.
1976.
But was that a half-hour show?
It was a sitcom, yeah. It says 1976.
See, my fuzzy memory, you know what?
You're getting it mixed up with Future Cop.
Yes, with Borgnine.
Yeah.
Borgnine is next to Borgnine on the bus.
I must Borgnine's have watched finest. Every episode of Holmes and Yo-Yo as a kid, which isn't hard because there was only 13.
I remember. And
I was a big fan.
And you know what's funny about it? Again, we've talked about this a million times on the show, that our young brains were able to hear a voice or see a face and go, hey, that's the guy from... which, you know, the older I get and the more I do it, the more it happens to me. Not only, you know, unless you sort of have a brain that's wired the way ours is, like a geek sort of brain that remembers this, you know, crazy stuff. Most people aren't able to do that, or they don't do that when they see a face. They don't go, oh, it is the guy from, you know, and we're the guys that will watch a movie, you know, for an hour and be sitting there not paying attention to the plot, thinking, how do I know who this guy is? And I remember watching that show thinking, oh, that's the guy from McMillan and Wife. He was their buddy.
I remember
John Shock
too, because my folks watch McMillan and Wife.
Right.
And then he yes. got another, he John was, Shook got another sci-fi sitcom, sort of, Turnabout. Do you remember Turnabout? Where the husband and wife switch brands?
No.
That was, I think, the next year.
No.
Oh, yeah, he kept going.
But it sounds ahead of its time.
And then
time.
I think he ended up playing Herman Munster at one point.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, in that.
And then he ended up playing a Klingon.
Yeah, that's right.
In,
he got around.
Undiscovered Country.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not Undiscovered Country. Four. Star Trek Four, right? The whales?
You're right, the whales, yeah.
The whales?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And
yes, yeah, but the one, wait, what was the one you said with the switching the brains?
Turnabout. It was actually a movie, and then it's a classic movie, I think, and then they turned it into a television series. I want to say like 77 or 78. Anyway,
it's kind of sort of a little John, big John.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. They switched brains, and it was him and Sharon Gless. I didn't know that.
Sharon Gless.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a. I haven't seen that show since 79, so... But I remember watching it as a kid and going, hey, that's Yo-Yo. So,
Sharon Gless, back in the day, was pretty tasty.
She's all right.
Not going to lie.
Yeah. And then, of course...
She was and Susan St. James, for that matter, from McMillan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hubba, hubba.
Yeah, she was cute.
But gravy. Is she still alive, Susan St. James?
I believe so. I haven't heard anything.
I'm going to have to give her a call.
Yeah. See how she's doing.
You know... I don't know what the earliest one. Those are probably the earliest ones, right?
The next one would be Quark.
I was going to say Cork. Cork, I remember. Yeah. I remember watching that when it was on, and I remember. No, this can't be right, because I remember seeing it in Starlog as well, but that had to be well after. I wasn't buying Starlog in 1978.
Well, and the fact of the matter is that Quark lasted 2 months, so it would...
Right.
You know, the ink wouldn't even be dry on Starlog before Quark was canceled.
Yeah, was that 78?
It was February 1978, and it was canceled in April 1978.
I remember watching it, again... Vague memories, and we're not talking every week here, but I remember watching it because it was, you know, because of Star Wars, because anything remotely connected to science fiction, I wanted to, you know, to be in on. Which, I mean, Quark, like I said, was it Buck Henry that created it?
Yeah,
or did he just write
Buck
on
Henry
it, or how did it?
And it had a, you know, Richard Benjamin as the star, which
Richard Benjamin, Tim Thomerson, who I think is the funniest character in it.
Gene,
Conrad Bain,
Conrad Janus,
Conrad Janus,
who would also go on to another sci-fi sitcom right after this.
That's right. What was Thomerson's name?
Because
he was half man, half.
Well, yeah, he was a he/she, which I guess really doesn't work anymore. But he was half man, half woman. Yeah.
Again, sci-fi ahead of its time.
Again, and the Barnstable twins as clones.
Transgender stuff.
Yeah,
they were the Wrigley twins, right? Wrigley Gum.
Doublemint twins, I think.
The Doublemint twins. Yeah. I chewed a lot of gum hoping to run into them.
You would.
You know. Just bought a ton of gum, hoping I'd bump into them someday.
The character I remember best was Ficus, who was supposed to be like the plant or the Spock of the show, and he was a plant.
Did he have a mustache?
No, it was actor. It was an actor who actually died right after the show was canceled. His name was Richard Kelton, and
did he have a big head?
No.
Or was that the name of the?
No, that was the name of their leader, the Big Head.
The Big Head.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think I remember the plant thing.
The Ficus? You don't remember Ficus?
But it's on.
He was the straight man.
It's on DVD, right?
Yeah.
Isn't the whole series on? Okay.
Yeah. There's a really famous episode where I think an alien queen kidnaps Ficus because she's in love with him, and he's not a he's a plant. So he's not interested in sex with her. So he shows her how he makes love, which is basically just laying there making these sounds because he wants pollination. And it was really funny at the time. I remember that. It was like, you know, it was Buck Henry. It was well written. But I think there's 8 episodes, and none of us ever seem to forget Quark. You know, if you talk to people...
But it is, because the thing is, it was, as far as I recall it was pretty well written. I mean,
yeah.
I've seen bits of it on YouTube since.
And I think like all these shows, kids watch the hell out of any of these shows. Like they appealed to kids more than anybody else. So, you know, that's probably why we all remember.
Well, it was, you know, yeah, the age of Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica and all that. So anything that had, you know, space or silver clothing.
Yeah.
And it's,
Quark was a garbage man,
right?
He was an outer space garbage man.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, that was really novel, too, and we'll get to it, but, you know, there's a bit of Futurama there, where hero is the most mundane, has the most mundane job you can
think
of.
He's not the good-looking captain. He's the,
right.
He's the garbage scow captain, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
You're right. Even Red Dwarf took a little bit of that. So, anyway, the biggest...
Well, that would lead us to the biggest...
Yeah.
I would think, even when you think about things like, you know, Third Rock from the Sun and stuff like that, which I think I've seen a couple of episodes, and as big as that was, Mork and Mindy was a phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, it was...
I never got to buy a Third Rock from the Sun doll or trading cards or lunchbox or... Like, yeah, when Robin Williams hit, there was a good year where you couldn't not run into rainbow suspenders or, you know, a Mork Iron-On t-shirt. He was everywhere. Cards.
I actually think I had a pair of suspenders because it had, they came with little, I had a pair now that you mentioned it. It came with a little hand, little glove that pointed and, you know, like a little star or something, whatever it was. And they marketed those. Those were official Mork and Mindy.
Yeah, Mork spacesuit is a reused Star Trek prop.
Oh, is it? Is it the guy? Is it the guy from the one with Lincoln?
Yeah, yeah. Like they redid. They
did you know?
Sorry. No, go ahead.
Did you know that Bossk from The Empire Strikes Back? That outfit is an old Doctor Who uniform.
Oh yeah, and it's also in Star Wars.
Oh, it is in Star Wars. You're right.
Yeah,
it's the guy with the sweet sideboards in the pub.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot that.
So, yeah, there's the sideburns guy, which they finally found. They finally found him. He's dead.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they found like who he was, and he's dead. But his kids were thrilled that somebody wanted to find him, you know.
But
Mork, awesome. I can't believe Mork and Mindy lasted 4 years. It had a really, like, they kept changing the show. I mean, the first season was all about Mork and Mindy and the grand, like, the father and the record store, and then I think they added a whole Jay Thomas and all these characters, including what's her name from American Dad there, Francine, Judy Stahl was added, I think.
Yeah, they kept futzing with it, and it was like it had a good thing going its first year or two, and then I remember an episode, and this is very, very vague memories, but the record store was still going, and the grandma, you know, there was the you know, classic grandma's gonna say something like, you know, sit on it, turkey, and you go, oh, look, an old lady said that, isn't that funny?
Yeah,
how crazy is that?
Yeah.
But there was an episode where Robin Williams is in it, or he runs into Robin Williams at the record store or something, and then people mistake Mork for Robin Williams, and then Robin Williams plays himself in the episode as well. Do you remember that one?
Oh my God, no.
and there's like a display. There's a display in the record store, the cardboard display of Robin Williams' new album, and Mork's going, I don't look anything like this guy. Like, I mean, it way jumped the shark.
Yeah.
Like in its second.
You know,
season,
I'm wrong about Francine, but it's Jim Stahl they added. I don't know where I was getting that mixed up, but yeah, they added all these new characters, and all the recurring characters disappeared, I think, for a while.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
we
should talk about the elephant in the room in the fourth season, adding Jonathan Winters as their kid, and letting Robin Williams and Jonathan Winters just eat scenery for all episodes.
How much cocaine could there have been in the conference room that day? Because the thing is, I get it. Robin Williams came to them and said, hey, my buddy Jonathan Winters. Because, you know, basically, Robin Williams ripped off Jonathan Winters' entire act.
Well, it was definitely cut of the same cloth.
Well, a long time. Winters, you know, I think he had a hard time with him at first because it was, you know, Winters would come on a show and he was never himself. He'd come on this night show and the whole time he's there, he's doing characters, and they used to, you know, the old thing where they brought in a box of hats
and put on.
It was a different. Well, Williams was kind of doing that manic thing.
Yeah.
He amped it up, but it was, you know, there would be no Robin Williams without Jonathan Winters, basically. So I get it. Williams goes, I want to pay this guy back for all he's, you know, the inspiration for me. But literally, the best you can come up with is that they have a kid together. And he's like aging backwards.
Yeah.
He comes out like Jonathan Winters. That's the absolute best. Jonathan Winters could have been his dad. It could have been, oh, look, my dad's here too. You know, he decided to follow me, and here he is. He's just as weird as me. He'd have two weirdos in the show. That's just as, you know, but then they had to add the romance thing too.
Yeah. All of a sudden he loved Mindy and wanted to have a baby with her, and it was like, oh, that seemed out of left field too. Because Mork seemed kind of asexual prior to that. Because there's one episode where Raquel Welch, and this is my favorite episode, tries to seduce him in a hot tub, and there's some really funny stuff in that one. But Mork is sort of not considered like a sexual being. So
right, it's weird. It just kind of comes out of nowhere.
And then the like, show ends. Do you remember how the show ends? It's they're chased by an alien named Kalnick, who's trying to destroy them, and they travel through time, and they're using like all of a sudden Mark has phasers coming out of his fingers, and I think at the last episode they end on a cliffhanger with Mark introducing himself to the world as an alien, and of course we never got our closure to that. I should bring up, too, we totally missed one, which is very similar to Mork in the 60s, My Favorite Martian.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Gosh, yeah, of course.
Probably the most, probably the most successful show, because it actually ran for 107 episodes. So
that was pretty big. Yeah. And there were, like, lunch boxes, and I think a
comic,
board game,
I had a comic
stuff like
book
that. Oh, really?
Yeah, I found a comic book in a bin as a kid.
Good old Bill Bixby. Man, that guy never stopped working.
No, he was a machine.
And every show that he had, I think The Courtship of Eddie's Father lasted a few seasons, I think.
Yeah, he had a couple real hits.
My Favorite Martian, Courtship of Eddie's Father.
Magician.
He had The Magician, then went right into The Incredible Hulk. Then, was there one after that he had? To me, he's like Robert Urich. Like, Robert Urich's another one. He had series after series after series.
Yeah.
Right up until he died.
Yeah.
He was never, like, not
I think Bixby began directing after that, and he was directing Blossom and stuff.
Right. The best episodes of Blossom, by the way, I'd like to point out.
Well, you know, we'll crack out the box set later. so we move into...
So Mork was huge.
And then fizzled out.
And it became one of those things that, to me, was like... When you looked at Laverne and Shirley and Happy Days, the other Gary Marshall things, like, they stopped just being about the comedy. They stopped just being about the situations and the goofiness that comes out of it. And it became, you know, obviously Fonzie became the focal point in the late 70s. But then it got, that was bad enough. But then it just got, you know, the times where Fonzie, like, was going to fight somebody who knows karate. You know, like, remember that Tom Hanks one?
I do. I watched that the other day.
It's a sitcom. You don't want to see a fist fight in a sitcom, but it was like, I don't know if they were playing to little kids or who exactly they were playing to, but the same thing happened like at the same time with Mork and Mindy.
Yeah.
It sort of had that syndrome, and it got, you know, too outrageous, which is a silly thing to say.
It was
a show about an alien.
It got gimmicky. So.
Right. And is it true or not? You might know this. That did they go to Orson Welles to be the voice of Orson at first, and he turned it down or something?
I have no idea.
And then they
idea.
Got whoever they got?
I have no idea.
I swear I heard or read that.
It could be.
Somewhere, sometime. But I had the trading cards. I had,
I had the doll.
The action figure with the egg.
Yeah. Oh, no, I had the doll with the talking backpack.
That's pretty cool, too. Is that like an 8-inch figure, or was that one of those weird in-between?
It's one of those weird... It figures. Was the same body they used for, like, Space 1999, the Sweat Hogs, and Sunshine Family. So you couldn't really do anything with it, you know? I don't know.
The Sunshine Family?
Yeah, the Sunshine Family. Those really creepy dolls they made in the 70s that looked like Moonies.
I don't think I've ever even heard of that.
They've got these creepy glazed over expressions, like it's and the name the Sunshine Family sounds cultish now. I make fun of it a lot, actually.
Yes,
but the
did they ever make the Sunshine Boys, George Burns and Walter Matthau?
No, I think Nego did those.
Oh, nice,
big hit.
They probably did.
Part of the world's greatest superheroes collection.
Speaking of totally off topic, are we still collaborating on my custom figures for the Nice Guys? Is that still a thing?
Yeah. Okay. I'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. I want
to
help.
Oh, yeah, I need to find a Russell. Finding an 8-inch Russell Crowe head shouldn't be a problem.
Really?
Yeah, because he's Jor-El, and he's and a bunch of other things, so I may be able to find him, and, you know, let's put him on a fat body. Anyway,
nice.
Moving into the 80s, we had some real successful stuff.
I'll tell you what, we did an entire episode on it, but the first thing that comes to mind when we talked about even doing this show was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we talked about it, you know, like we did an entire episode, obviously, but in depth how that was one of the first times in my brain I was seeing something where two worlds were colliding. Actually, three worlds kind of were colliding. Something British, science fiction, and Monty Python. So yeah. It was like this combination of Doctor Who, Monty Python, and Star Wars, and British, and all that stuff that was just this in this soup.
For me,
made me
it was
go,
the
"What
first,
the hell is this?"
A lot of science fiction comedy is shittily written. It mm-hmm. tries to make space jokes, and you know it's jokey.
It's true.
And
yep.
Hitchhiker's Guide was the first time I think as a kid, even or as an adult, where I thought I saw something that. It was science fiction. It was funny. It all worked.
Mm-hmm.
And you know,
because
and it was smart.
Sorry, go ahead.
It was smart. And
right, and I think the key to making something like that work is, you know, Futurama does it,
yeah.
but they do it much, much bigger, obviously.
Yeah.
But the key to making something like that work is applying, not only making it mundane, but applying this, you know, the same sort of logic or conversations or absurdity that you would have in a normal sitcom in a regular sort of life, putting it into this setting and then, you know, amplifying it. So, you know, the Vogons aren't these incredible, you know, incredibly threatening, you know, bad guys like the villain in what's the one with Tim Allen and
Sigourney
Weaver.
I know the one you're talking about.
Okay, so that, but I'm saying that was a true villain bad guy, Galaxy Quest. So the villains in this thing and Hitchhikers were ridiculous. They were like the characters in Holy Grail. They were not very threatening. They were stupid. They were mundane. And I think that's why it worked the way it did. Things were drab and everyday, and they weren't.
Yeah,
you know,
they were
lasers and
pencil pushers.
Yes, yeah. Exactly, and that was kind of what I think what made the like everybody in it was an archetype of a sort of character on Earth.
Yeah.
Like Zaphod was a braggart, and you know the Vogons were mundane bureaucrats, and so on and so forth. And I think that's what made it work. But that thing blew my head off, and of course I became a Hitchhiker Douglas Adams fan for the rest of my life. But so that's what I think of. And then you said there was one in that was
Small Wonder.
Small Wonder cannot be the next. Is that the next one?
84 to 89, and I watched a whole bunch of this with my jaw open, like completely mortified at this show. It was always on like Saturday morning at like 6:30, and you know before I go to work or something.
It ran from 84 to 89.
From 84 to 89. It shouldn't have ran more than one episode because it was god-awful.
How on earth did that thing run that long?
Let's
I had
just
no
break
idea.
It down. creepy family and a creepy father invents a little girl robot. And it's a kid who's acting like a robot. And, I don't know if the show had some sort of big crescendo or if it had some sort of finale because I probably only watched a few episodes of the first season and was just horrified, but it ran forever.
But it's the kind of thing that, again, you go, you know, this is the, you know, I know that Alf, I think Alf was on the air in 84, 85
Alf
or something.
Alf came out,
wasn't
I think,
it?
Around, 85, I think, is when Alf came out.
And that was kind of a, even though there was funny stuff in Alf, admittedly, it was the kind of thing that you go, I can't believe this is the kind of thing that is getting on the air. This was that, you know, both of those are very sort of 60s, you know.
I would have to say that Alf is on a different shelf than, like, Small Wonder.
Oh, absolutely.
It was trash.
No, Alf has got, yeah.
Alf is a run-of-the-mill sitcom.
I'm saying to even push it out the door. At that stage, that your lead character is going to be a puppet from outer space kind of thing.
Or sometimes a man in a very unconvincing suit.
Right. It just shouldn't, it kind of shouldn't have worked, and it shouldn't have sort of gotten out the door.
But it was a hit.
You know, but it did. It was a hit, yeah. Merchandise.
Cartoons.
And, you know, lunchboxes, and I don't know if they're, were there action figures or just like little PVC characters?
I think like dolls and PVC characters. There was, I seem to recall fast food tie-ins, and yeah, there was a lot of, Alf was a big thing, and he even got, if you recall, like a, who asked for this, like a TV movie in the 90s. Where, you know...
I don't recall that at all.
I watched...
Wow.
I think I watched about the first 10 minutes of it in the 90s when it aired, and I was kind of like, I don't care what happens to Alf, and I turned it off.
You're halfway through it going, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I just realized, I don't care what happens to Alf. Why am I watching this?
Yeah.
No, but did you ever see the movie... was it Permanent Midnight or something? It was Ben Stiller.
Oh, yeah.
Owen Wilson.
Years and years ago, yeah.
And it was about the guy, he basically was playing the guy that created Alf. He was this writer that was a massive cokehead.
Oh.
And his own worst enemy. Maybe it was heroin, I forget. But, you know, it was a, it was an okay movie, but it certainly explains a lot of where Alf came from.
Alf keeps popping up again and again. You know, the thing that, I think the guy who is Alf, the actor, he's like a puppeteer. He constantly brings Alf back.
I thought he died.
Paul Fusco.
I thought someone just died.
I don't think it's Paul Fusco. He's
alive. Somebody died. Oh, I thought something to do with Alf just happened, where he died. Somebody died, or maybe the creator died.
No,
I don't
the
know what.
The actor who played the unconvincing, you know, like Alf when he walks around. Yeah.
Oh. Was he anybody else?
Probably. I you know, I can't remember his name.
I mean, was he like anybody that, was he like, you know, anybody that we know that was like, he was like, oh, he was Mac and me or something. Was he?
I don't know.
Other characters?
I actually don't know.
When the dad, didn't creepy shit happen with the dad?
Yeah, the actor Max Wright, there was I think drugs were heavily involved, and he had some sort of incident. I remember a very embarrassing video got on.
Yes,
where he was hanging around with some gentlemen and just very strange behavior. you know, again, I would assume it all has to do with his drug, you know, his drug issues.
Yeah, I think it was like crack.
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying drugs are good at all. Crack is a very bad drug.
I mean, he went on to do Beyond Friends. So, you know, he had a really good career going for himself at the time.
And, you know, listen, if stuff is, you know, I don't know if Alf is in syndication, but I would assume that it is, that it's playing in different parts of the world all the time. Like, there's some not bad money coming in if you're, you got something like that that's been going on. I'm saying that even if you didn't work, if you weren't sort of consistently working,
yeah,
that's some, you know, that's,
well, he was,
that's
he was
just
also on
easy money.
Norm Macdonald's sitcom too, as I recall. He, yeah, he got around as an actor, and yeah, he had a real strange.
Well, he got around as a man too,
yeah,
apparently.
A little bit. And of course, in the 80s, it the late 80s that Red Dwarf came out?
Red Dwarf, I think the first season was 88.
Yeah.
88 or 89, I think, yeah.
The first time I saw that show, I was super drunk. It was 1:30 in the morning, and I fell asleep during it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a year later where I started talking to somebody who I would consider kind of nerdy, and I went, is there a sitcom where a guy's dead and he has an H on his head? Or did I make that up? And he knew everything about Red Dwarf and lent me all the tapes. But for a while there, I walked around thinking, I made that show up.
Well, you almost could have, because it is a goofy idea.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I am not a Red Dwarf guy. I have nothing against Red Dwarf. It just...
You're not a fan?
No. It's not that I'm not a fan.
Oh.
I just remember that, you know, I pushed the boat out with the early stuff, and it didn't appeal to me. However, as the show went on, there's some very funny stuff, and I need to really dip into it and watch some of the last, you know, three or four seasons kind of thing, because the ones that I have seen are very, very funny and very clever.
Yeah.
Do
you know the first Rimmer was actually,
in fact, it just,
Alfred Molina?
No, I don't think I knew
that. Yeah, he left the show.
I know that they tried to do him, They tried to do an American version.
It's god awful.
Of Red
Dwarf. Both versions are just terrible.
And I saw part of it and it was just awful.
Yeah, yeah.
Really bad.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm a huge fan.
Should sort of be left. Okay, so did you ever get the ship?
No.
I have no
merchandise whatsoever.
I'm telling you, Product Enterprise, you and I always go on about how great they were.
Did that thing actually make it out the door? I think it did, didn't it?
It did make it out the door, and it has become incredibly difficult to find this thing. But it's the Bug, and it comes with three little mini figures, and it's got light-up features and lines from the show and things like that. It is really tough to find, but now I just for kicks, I did a search a while back, and average price was like $500 or $600.
No kidding.
Yeah, because Corgi also made some diecast.
Yeah, it was like
back
the Starbug
in like
the
early
stuff.
2000s.
Yeah,
yeah, they did. They definitely did that, but it never got like an action figure range or anything too much more beyond that. But the Product Enterprise thing is really cool because they really put a lot of effort into it, the packaging and everything else. But that would be... See, now here's the thing. This could be a tricky one, but I would put Spaced into this category. So Spaced was 2000... No, 99 was the first season. Simon Pegg, Jessica Stevenson, now Jessica Hines, directed by Edgar Wright, etc. I would put that in this category because it's kind of like a Simpsons Futurama thing where it's kind of living in a heightened existence.
I would give it to it too because it was the first time you saw credible nerdy people on TV.
Right.
Not like I always hearken to this, but I find The Big Bang Theory painful to watch personally because it's there are these cartoony caricatures of what nerdy people are, or people who are into,
it is, it is difficult for me to comment on because
I understand where,
as you know, we have a license. Yeah. But having said that, not my bag,
yeah,
at all. But you're right, and it's funny you say that because I think either in one of the documentaries or article I read a million years ago, Simon Pegg was saying, trends. Love it or hate it, you can't deny that it was a big deal, and there were some funny things. I never took to it, but he was saying how there was some good stuff there. But he said we'd watch this stuff and think these people don't. I don't know anybody that looks like any of the people in this show, yeah. And I certainly don't buy any of the dialogue. And so that's kind of one of the areas that Spaced came out of was them going, let's make something that shows what late 20s, early 30s starts to look like. And also being the generation that, didn't, and we are this generation, that doesn't have to put away comic books and video games. And, we don't quite want to grow up all the way.
Yeah, didn't put away.
But we also we don't have to put that stuff away. It's become more.
There was stuff in there where, like him burning his Star Wars stuff because he saw Phantom Menace. That was.
Right.
Like, I watch the show now and it's like, it's okay. But at the time, it was like such a breath of fresh air. And
I adore it.
Yeah.
And there are three or four episodes that are, as good as anything that's come out of British television in 20 some years. I think there are like the one with the shooting. The one where Simon Pegg's character says, yeah, men have this, somebody was saying women are on the same cycle if they,
yeah.
They work together long enough and they've got this connection. He said, well, men have it too. And then Nick Frost goes to pull a gun out of his jacket, but it's he's using his fingers to go shoot Simon. And then they have this imaginary shootout. And then all of a sudden Brian gets up and starts with, and then they bring it into the show later on when they get about to get beat up by that gang of young guys. That's very surreal to me. That's like that plays on a surrealism that it seems to be in a heightened sort of universe.
Yeah,
a lot of the stuff that went on that didn't make sense or little time things. And so it to me it was yes the credible characters, but also there was a sci-fi sort of vein that kind of went through it. Things didn't make sense all the time, and they jumped around with time and things like that. So yeah, I would definitely put that in there.
We skipped from the 90s there, and there were two little bumps in the road I wanted to bring up. Actually, three.
Oh, please do. Which ones?
Third Rock from the Sun, which was Four Aliens. That started out great, and then I kind of lost a lot of interest. I think the concept was great.
I mean, it just got too big. Yeah.
Everybody was just big.
So big and
yeah.
broad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just play it real. Yeah. And, you know.
But there was a really funny episode, I think, where John Lithgow gets on a plane and says something like, "There's a man on the wing." And, you know.
Yes, I remember that.
That's my one takeaway. I did like it for the time, and then, you know, obviously it.
That was great.
And then I want to bring up. And I'm Homeboys from Outer Space.
Yes.
This was on
I'm going to say, was that 94, 93?
I remember I was living in the city. I want to say 94, 95. I watched every episode of this because it was such a train. But the thing that...
I can't believe
The thing that killed me about it was James Doohan was on it.
James Doohan,
He was on it as... And so was John Lithgow. I didn't know that. James Doohan was on it as a character named Pippin. And, of course, that was a... It was a basketball joke. Scottie Pippin. Right? So instead of being Scottie...
Oh, I thought it was the musical.
No, it's a...
Sorry.
But I think James Doohan had to leave. Because Paramount had a thing of you can't parody Star Trek. If I recall correctly.
Oh. Yeah. I thought maybe it was his family that stepped in and said, "Look, we don't need the money that bad.
Let me just get off the show. I haven't seen this show since it aired, but I want to point out the clever names of the amazing actors they got on this show. Burt Ward as Gerbil, Anthony Hopkins as President's White Man.
Anthony Hopkins got on that show?
Apparently. Casey Kasem as Spacey Kasem. Oh, my. The writing.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Anthony Hopkins or Anthony Perkins?
It says Anthony Hopkins. I think Perkins might have been dead by this point.
Anthony Hopkins was on Homeboys from Outer Space.
I swear to God, it says it. Now I have to find...
No, because this would have been post
Silence of the Lambs.
And winning an Oscar.
I know.
How could this have happened? Now you've got me.
I don't think it's true because I can't find it on his IMDb. I would also renew. Now I have to know.
No. Who knows? It could be that the guy that created the show was a friend of his or something, and you know he got a favor out of him or whatever. But I have to find that. I've got to find it.
Yeah, it just says Anthony Hopkins on Wikipedia. Wikipedia could be wrong.
I cannot
find anything. Sherman Hemsley was on. What a shock.
Now that makes sense.
That makes total sense.
Hemsley makes sense. Yeah. What was the other one you said? So Hopkins, Hemsley,
Eric Estrada. It had a...
Estrada makes total sense.
Yeah, George Takei.
Because, see, that's the thing. That's why it jumps out at you, because you go, you know, Marjo Gortner, Eric Estrada, you know,
You know. I can't back the president thing up at all, so I think it might be crap.
Steve Landisberg and John Gielgud.
Yeah, it jumps. Yeah, yeah, I can't back it up, so let's just pretend that isn't there.
I'd rather believe that it is true. I got to find it. So we'll dig it up.
Have to get the box set.
I mean, I seem to recall that there was a little bit of uproar about it when it hit.
Yeah, it was people saying this is stupid.
Well, besides that, using the term homeboys.
Oh yeah.
They thought that was deemed as racially insensitive.
It's very strange.
No.
It was garbage.
Again, I want to point out, and I know I'm a broken record with this stuff, that, and again, I'm not trying to sound like Captain Television by any means. I'm saying even the stuff, even things that I've worked on that are instantly forgettable, things that are nowhere near the kind of exposure necessarily, or even the budget of something like Homeboys from Outer Space on UPN. I mean, I've worked on things that the world has never seen, will never see. I've worked on shows that get canceled after two episodes, you know, yeah. game shows or things like that. I'm saying even on that level that I'm on, there are meetings upon meetings upon meetings to move a piece of paper, to decide what the name of a thing is going to be, and which guy should, oh, make that noise, don't make that noise, when you fall into the pit, or, you know, just these ridiculous, the minutiae it's so top-heavy on all these shows that takes so long to get anything done. You know, but nothing just, you don't just go, let's go make this show, here's what it's going to be called, let's film it on Friday, it'll air on Monday. Everything takes forever to get moving. We didn't just wake up one day and it was on television. This came out of somebody's mouth and kept going. It went from the pitch to, well, write up a treatment. Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. Write a pilot script, and then we'll. And it kept going and kept going. It had to get through the network. It had to get through everybody in creative, et cetera, et cetera.
And somebody had to approve calling the currency shabdibs.
Yes, and I guarantee that was a week and a half's worth of conversations to even get there. And it got made, and it got on the air, just like the. Let's do it. It's the dad, and he makes a robot, a kid. Like, well, why? Can they not have kids? No, they can have kids. He just wanted a little girl around the house that's a robot. Why not a robot? Man, you know, that all those conversations were held, and something got made, and then it went on to be on the air for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, and the Homeboys thing goes on the air, and it's on for 6 episodes, you know, whatever. But it's always shocking to me when these things get to television because – or anything, a film or whatever, it doesn't just, you know, someone doesn't just cough it up out of their mouth and suddenly it's there. It takes forever to get anything creatively done.
Have you ever seen the other one that aired in the 90s called Whoops? That Fox, I think, let anything go at this time, where it's about...
Was it based on Whoops Apocalypse?
Well, it was the survivors of a nuclear holocaust. They live in an abandoned fire. Like, it was supposed to be Gilligan's Island.
That sounds familiar. Yeah. That kind of rings a bell, actually.
It was... I think it aired after, like, Married with Children, but it just didn't... You know, nobody watched it.
That kind of rings a bell.
Yeah, I don't even think I watched it, and that would have been right up my alley. But Fox, of course, I think launched one of the biggest sci-fi sitcoms of all time, which was Futurama, and then they just murdered it.
Yes.
I love Futurama. The original first four seasons are amazing. I always hated football because it interrupted it. And then, you know, it got brought back. They did some movies. I was never terribly fond of the movies. I don't know about you. And
I've actually got the box set, and I've started to dip into it.
Yeah.
And I watched one of the movies, like The Beast with 1,000 Backs or something, 1,000 Heads or whatever. You know, it's okay. I mean, it's, you know, not as good. But the first couple of seasons, first two or three seasons, I thought were just like...
Oh, they were magical.
They were kicking the crap out of The Simpsons, I thought.
It was my favorite show on television at the time. I remember that.
Yeah.
And I'd still say Bender is one of the most iconic TV characters ever.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, and, you know, I think the success of Futurama, and then people started to pursue, I think, an audience with this kind of stuff, to where we're at a point now where there's been several sci-fi sitcoms. I mean, NBC just launched one called Powerless, which is set in the DC universe.
Right.
There was another one, I think it was called The Neighbors recently, which was about aliens. I can't remember that one.
I actually watched a couple episodes.
My in-laws made me watch one. It wasn't bad, yeah.
It was a pretty interesting cast. There also was a show, a UK show, that actually got quite a bit of buzz, called No Heroics.
Oh, yeah.
And it was about, you know, a city, you know, that, you know, superheroes, you know, but it was very, you know, some of them are lame, some of them are okay. And
was it a lot
really
like there was My Hero, too? Remember that with the Father Ted guy as a superhero?
Right.
Yeah.
No, he was, that was more that he was.
That was very
goofy. He was like Superman.
Yeah.
And, It was very goofy, and it went on forever.
Yeah.
No Heroics was much more. It was much more politically incorrect not a family thing, and people really dug it. I didn't like it, but it's kind of a precursor to what's going on with this No. What was it called? What's the one you used? Powerless. Yeah. Actually, you know what? I'd actually throw this into the list too. Now that we're getting kind of up to date.
Yeah.
And that is a show called The Mighty Boosh.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which is really
absurd.
It's surreal. It's insane. You know, we've talked about Rich Fulcher, obviously, yeah. And he's a friend, and Rich was on it. But if you've never seen it or heard of it, please check it out because it's. You know,
hard
the
to Zooniverse describe.
Is what they, that first season,
yeah.
they said, you know, it was, and there's, it's science fiction and it's horror and it's surrealism and, but it's definitely, you know, it definitely has that audience in mind that's going to get the jokes and get sort of the references to,
you know,
science fiction and, you know, space.
You just jarred one out of me, British, some of the same people in it. Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, which is purposely set as a 1980s, lost 1980s horror show, but there's a lot of science fiction in it, set in a hospital. And honestly, they just nail that look and vibe of a crappy TV show you saw some Sunday afternoon, and you, what the hell was that? You know, it just looks like
it's so brilliant. It's
early 80s British drama. Written by a raving maniac who loves himself, and it's I cannot recommend Dark Place enough. If you haven't seen it, seek it out. It is very funny.
I would say Dark Place and you know, because Mighty Boosh, you can sort of you can point to and go yeah, I can see the sort of, you know, the two of them are kind of like Morecambe and Wise with the way that this one's really hip and this one doesn't get it, but then that there's a lot of, you know, surrealism, like a Python-esque kind of surrealism, and there's a narrative, but it's weird, you know, but it is incredibly unique. There's not a lot that you could point to and go, well, that's like the Mighty Boosh is its own thing. Well, Marenghi is like, it's so layered. It's not just, it's Garth Marenghi is a Stephen King type character. He and the rest of the cast are sitting down being interviewed about this lost show that never aired or only aired a few times or whatever it was. And as they're talking to the camera about the show, you're seeing clips from the show.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's mind blowing that you could pitch something like that. Like someone go, yeah, go ahead, go do it. It's a complete one-off. And, Matthew Holness, who you know was Garth Marenghi in that, he shows up in stuff. He's definitely done. Did you ever see Man to Man?
Oh yeah,
Dean Lerner.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, there's a couple episodes of that are just. And again, Richard Ayoade, who ended up having a huge success and being very well known from the IT crowd, he's his producer. Right, his manager. He produced.
He's
the show,
his producer. Dean Lerner is his manager, and he's also his actor in the show, and. The show is so, it's a bit, it's hard to do something that's bad, like, you know, because everyone, you know, it just kind of, when people go out and intentionally make a bad movie, but Dark,
right.
And there's only, it helps that there's only six episodes of Dark Place, but.
It commits to it. It
really commits to it.
It,
you know, they flub shots, lines, the writing is, you know, the writing is terrible. Dean Lerner can't act to save his life. And there's just...
And Matt Berry, too. Matt Berry
is fantastic in it. Because
people will now know from Toast of London, and he was in the
IT crowd.
Season one of The Mighty Boosh. He was in the IT crowd.
Yeah.
He's in it as well. It's very incestuous, all these guys that...
And
Alice Lowe. The woman in it is Alice Lowe.
Yeah.
Has become quite a... she's just wrote and directed something that she's in.
There's a really dark story for her actress, too. Like, if you watch the show, she's missing from the interviews. And as the show unravels, it's like they're... Maybe Garth Marenghi killed her? You know, like, you're not sure.
It's really strange. Well, there's a bit of that in... there's some darkness in Man to Man too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think it continues. Yeah.
So. Yeah, like some, you know, guy that worked on the show or did something that's ready to, you know, it's ready to kill himself, and yeah. You know, I don't remember if it happens in the episode or what, but it is. They're horrible characters. They're completely self-involved, horrible characters. But I think most people would, you know Richard Ayade from
the IT Crowd.
From IT Crowd, see him in Garth Marenghi. It's a completely different character. Yeah. Dean Lerner and very dark.
It's a very stupid science fiction show. You know, there's an episode where they all turn into apes. There's an episode where they're, I think, being attacked by Scottish ghosts. I don't know. None of it makes much sense, and it's all very.
And you know what's funny about this too is that from all of these guys, like when I was at the Doctor Who thing, the Gallifrey One thing. You know, you get a few minutes with Lala Ward. I wanted to talk about Douglas Adams
because,
you know, she's married to Richard Dawkins, but I think they're separated now. So I was going to say, hey, tell your husband to, you know, keep it up. But I think they're separated now. So I talked to her about Douglas Adams. I talked to Paul McGann about Withnail and I. And when I got to Louise Jameson, we talked about Toast of London. And when I said Toast of London, it took her a second to go, oh my God, like, you know, you've seen the show. And then she starts laughing. And she said, oh, my God, I had the best time. Well, how about that outfit that I was wearing?
Yeah.
Da, da, da. And we were talking about Matt Berry and how much, because I mentioned the BAFTA thing and, you know, how we loved Flash Gordon as a kid and all this stuff. And she said, yeah. She said, it's filled with all these references, and he seems to love Doctor Who and Peter Davison and all this. All these guys, and I think that's really what some of the Garth Marenghi thing is. It's like, it's their wink to, you know, Blake Seven and Doctor Who, this low budget sci-fi stuff.
Yeah, and
it's
wonderful.
Came out of the UK,
and I hope there's
more.
And it's
more fantastic.
Of it. Yeah. So unfortunately, I have to close this one out because I have to go get go pick up a stereo. Believe it or not,
unlikely story.
It's unlikely in a parking story. Lot.
I think we're pretty much up to date.
Yeah,
I think we're pretty much
and
good with.
Listen, if we missed one, please tell us on the Facebook page. I'm sure I'm gonna hang up right now and go, damn it, I forgot such and such. But
yes, please remind us, and then the next episode we'll go deeper into something else. But we thought we'd get this one out, and we'll hit another one very soon.
And the person who suggested it was Brian Fee. Thank you very much, Brian. And
thank you, Brian,
giving us suggestions.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Take care.
Talk soon.